Hi, I'm David Moorhead, and I'm here hosting Building a Better Sefton podcast. And I am delighted that we have Mike Prendergast from the Conservative Party on to explain how the Conservatives feel that they are going to help build a better Sefton. How are you, Mike?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for asking me to come on as well. It's a good opportunity for me to talk to you and to talk to, obviously, to your viewers and your listeners as well.
Right, thank you very much. Now, the first question is, can you explain your current position and how do you feel your party is going to help build a better Sefton, considering that you are in the minority?
Very much in the minority at the moment.
Yes. Sorry, I was going to say, and perhaps you could explain why you are in the minority.
So, as we said before, so I'm Mike Prendergast. I'm the Conservative group leader on Sefton Council. I'm a Duke's Ward councillor as well. So Duke's Ward is parts of Birkdale and around Southport town centre. In terms of what I think that we can do as a party in Sefton and what I think that Sefton should be prioritising really from a Conservative perspective, I think for me, the big thing is the waste, frankly, within the council across various departments. And there's a lot of inefficiency within the council. One of the reasons I'm a Conservative is that I believe in low taxes where possible, delivering efficient public services at as minimal cost to the taxpayer as possible, but still ensuring that the services being delivered are quality, meet the needs of those people who are receiving them, and ultimately provide value for money for the taxpayer as well. Because ultimately, all residents and businesses across Sefton were all contributing to the running of Sefton Council. And I think that some of the projects which have been embarked on over the last few years and the way some departments have been managed hasn't been to the betterment of Sefton or the residents, the businesses and the people who receive those services, really. So I think that what we as a Conservative Party, what we're doing at the moment, is that we're holding the ruling Labour administration to account, because they do have a very sizable majority on Sefton Council right now. That might change in future, but where we are right now, that is the case for ourselves and for other opposition parties as well, really. And we're all doing our best to make sure that the decisions that are being taken by Labour are scrutinised, that they're held to account, and that where possible, we can try to get the changes, if we can, to try to deliver better services and improvements for Sefton residents and businesses, really. In terms of where we are as a party within Sefton, so you're right, you know, we are a small party within Sefton. It's been that way for a while, really. I mean, and the fact is that all opposition parties, when you're talking about Sefton in comparison to the Labour group, we're all small parties, really. If you're talking about Conservatives, Liberal Democrat, Greens, independent councillors and so on, we're all small parties in comparison to the ruling group. But one of the reasons why we are where we are at the moment is that for a long time, our party, so my party, has been in power in national government. And one of the things you do seem to find in local government level politics is that the party of national government tends to not do particularly well at local government level, because when people are unhappy with various policies, whatever they might be, local elections are sometimes used as a bit of a protest vote, really, to kind of send the national government a message. And that's probably what's happened over the last 12 to 13 years, really. Whilst we've been in power nationally, it sometimes means that at a local level, that we as a party aren't as successful as we'd like to be, really.
Right. No, thank you very much for that. And I do think you yourself on the Children's Scrutiny Committee have held Sefton to account. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, I think it's really important on that committee, actually, as well, because that's one of the biggest issues I think Sefton's had over the last, whilst they've been in power, really. And the culmination of that was the 2022 Ofsted report. And yes, they've had a better report recently, but it was the preceding decade which led up to that. And one of the big things I thought as being a member of that committee, really, is that, I mean, this is one of the problems with Sefton Council, is that all the overview and scrutiny committees are controlled by Labour councillors. So they're effectively marking their own homework, really. But yeah. I saw my role on that committee to hold them to account and to ask difficult, uncomfortable questions. And sometimes there were difficult exchanges of views, people didn't like the questions that were being asked. But from my perspective, one, I didn't particularly care if it made people uncomfortable. But secondly, it was important to ask those difficult questions as well.
Right, no, thank you. I'm going to ask you an uncomfortable question now. The Conservative Party seems to have, in my opinion, seems to have undergone a change from the days of Margaret Thatcher to the days of Boris Johnson and beyond. And with all modern politics now, it seems quite hard to define what the Conservative Party and other parties are and where the actual members stand.
I think, to be honest, that's not an uncomfortable question. That's a very pertinent, relevant question, I think, to what's going on with the Conservative Party at the moment. Because I think one of the reasons, and there's lots of reasons why the general election last year went the way it did, but I think from my perspective, one of the reasons that we ended up where we did is that we'd become almost that some, well, certain people within the party, certain members of the party, certain people operating within the party had kind of forgotten what the Conservative Party was about, really, that we were, to a degree, trying to be all things to all men. And really, to me, I'm a member of the Conservative Party because I believe in low taxes, small state, empowering people to help themselves, really, rather than being dependent on the state to support them. And I think that that fundamentally is why lots of people have supported the Conservative Party in the past and will support us again in future. But I think right now there is a getting back to that kind of message, really, about what being a Conservative means and getting that out to the wider public. It's difficult at the moment. There's no getting away from that. We're not long after a big general election defeat. But I think that the party in general it's heading the right way, which we're starting to get those messages across. I'm hoping that after the party conference, we might see some more policy announcements about how you kind of flesh those ideas out, really. So it's good talking about general principles, but ultimately you've got to be able to give people policies that they can relate to and how it's going to improve their lives, really. And because that's what it's all about, is making people's lives better.
Yes, thank you for that. But currently, am I right, there were four Tory councillors?
You are.
And you've only got three now because
we have.
One has gone to reform.
He has, yeah.
Was that a surprise? And do you feel that there seems to be a national trend that some conservatives are moving to reform?
Well, I was certainly disappointed that it happened. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I wasn't particularly pleased when I found out it was going to be happening. But it's not unique to our group in Sefton. Like you say, it's happened to other councillors across the country. There's MPs as well have done it. I think it started to be the case that a couple of Labour councillors in other parts of the country have joined Reform as well. So there's no getting away from the fact that in the opinion polls, Reform are doing well. That is attractive to some people. Some people are very conscious of the fact that they will have elections next year. And not for everyone, but for some people, they'll be thinking, how am I best going to get re-elected next year or whenever their election is upcoming? For me, that's not going to be happening for me. I'm a Conservative for the reasons I've said before, really. And I don't, for all people talk about Reform being a party of the right of politics, if you like, you know, the centre right, the right, you know, economically, etc., etc. To me, I don't actually know what they stand for, other than wanting to get Nigel Farage elected. Ideologically and in terms of their political convictions, I don't know what they believe in. And sometimes you hear them talking about, well, we want lower taxes, we want to empower people to help themselves. That sounds quite conservative, really, but then in the same breath, you hear them talking about, well, we want to increase spending on welfare, we want to nationalise major industries, we want to spend huge amounts of public, well, taxpayer money on public projects, which will ultimately cost hundreds of billions of pounds and will end up with taxes going up. So to me, I don't know what they stand for.
I was going to say, I've read their manifesto and I thought it had huge gaps of knowledge, of understanding of how to run a country. I think the education one was, we want to be able to tell teachers what to teach. We want more patriotic history,
which is a
vote winner. But they haven't addressed, there's actually a shortage of teachers. So there's not going to be people standing in the classroom to carry that out. So
it's not well thought out. It's sound bites, it's headlines, it's all about grabbing attention on social media or on TV, and it's not well thought out policy. And clearly there's a market for that, because they're doing quite well in the opinion polls. But yes, I do think longer term, people will start to ask questions about, well, how are you going to achieve these things that you've talked about? The manifesto at the last general election, I think when it was costed up, depending on who you read, but it was cost of £120 to £150 billion. I mean, where is the money for that going to come from?
Yeah. I mean, that's the shocking thing, that it is ill thought out. It isn't well researched.
And I think the general election kind of shown this as well. And it's still that, this feeling still here. There's still a lot of frustration in general with politicians. And I think I personally think it kind of follows on from COVID, really, where as a nation, we had to spend huge sums of money supporting people's jobs, people's businesses, people who were having to self-isolate, all that. And it was completely right that we provided that kind of support, but that has to be paid for. And there doesn't seem to be an acceptance yet, I don't think, that in order to pay for that, you've got to rein in public spending, because that level of borrowing over a relatively short space of time, effectively we maxed out the country's credit card to get ourselves through COVID, so you've got to repay that, and that means cutting spending, and that means difficult decisions have to be taken. And I think when Rishi Sunak was PM, they started having those difficult conversations, but by then the mood of the general public was, I mean, they didn't really want to listen to that at that time, I think, and they just wanted to change of government, and that's what was delivered at the general election. Whether you think that was right or wrong or not, is depends on your political persuasion, really. But I think there's a general frustration with politicians that over the last few years, living standards haven't really gone up a great deal. Inflation's been high. Yeah. As a nation, we've borrowed a lot of money. And all of these things put together, ultimately people vote how they feel economically. So if you don't feel well off, if you don't feel that you're better now than you were a few years ago with whichever political party is in charge, you're going to vote for an alternative. And at the moment, because of the sound bites and the headlines they're generating, Reform do offer something different to a degree, because they're a new party. And that's why people might, you know, in the local elections next year, they might do okay nationally, they might do okay in Wales and Scotland. It's a long way off, we don't know yet. And a lot can happen between now and then. But I think there's a general sense of frustration. And I do feel that some of the people who are voting for Reform aren't necessarily voting for Reform because they're really passionate supporters of the party and what they stand for. It's more to do with a general sense of frustration, really, that other political parties and other mainstream politicians haven't been able to deal with some of the issues that they might and should have dealt with, perhaps.
Right. No, I think you sum it up that I don't think the Reform votes are for Reform. They're for change. They're for frustration. They're for, I want a better life. I might as well give someone else a chance. There were many Conservative prime ministers during the last government.
Too many.
Right. Could I ask why you thought there were too many, and who do you think did the better job?
I think that there was obviously some internal party division, wasn't there, over various things. So obviously Boris Johnson. I mean, if you go back over the course of the full 14 years, you know, David Cameron resigned over the result of the Brexit vote. So that's one of the changes, because he campaigned quite strongly to remain. He lost the vote, so he took what he thought was the honourable decision to resign. Then we had Theresa May. Again, you know, she fought a general election. The result didn't go quite the way that she wanted, and so therefore there was a leadership challenge from Boris Johnson. We then had another general election, 2019, which he won quite resoundingly. And then there were the issues that kind of flowed from from COVID, really. Obviously, we had Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and then Rishi Sunak. I think that when a party is in power for 14 years, it's quite unusual to have one or two leaders to last that long, to be perfectly honest with you. So there's bound to be some change from that perspective, because it's pretty unusual to have one party in power for that length of time and only have one or two leaders anyway. There's no getting away from the fact that certainly from after Boris Johnson, then we had Liz Truss, that wasn't the Conservative Party showing its best side, really. I mean, that's probably the best way to put it, I think, from my perspective.
Right.
And things could have been done differently and could have been done a lot better, I think. I think Rishi Sunak, for what it's worth, I think when he got into power and started to make changes, he did bring inflation down. He was starting to announce the policies that I think would have been, I mean, our general election manifesto, I think if that had been given the opportunity to be implemented, I think as a country would be in a totally different position than where we are now economically. But from his perspective, I think that it was difficult for him to turn around what had happened previously. And by that point, because of the chopping and changing, because nobody wants to see that, and no member of the public wants to be looking at the government and the way it's being run, and seeing all that change and churn and turnover, no one's going to look at that and think, well, that's what we want to see. Divided parties, whether they're Conservative, Labour, Liberal Democrats or whatever.
Yeah. Sorry, from the outside, it looked like a civil war.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is internal party strife that was spilling out.
Yeah.
And people forgot. I think that people forgot why they were elected, really. They were sent there by their constituents to improve their lives, to represent them, and to put the country first. That's what should have been first and foremost in everyone's mind. When anyone's making any decisions about political matters, is how does this help the country? That should be your first objective, not party political considerations. It should always be country first. And I think some people might have forgotten that.
No, I totally agree. It looked like they were in it for themselves, certain individuals, and that gave quite an off-putting message about the Conservatives. I was going to ask if I bring up the Bootle strand, because obviously Bootle is an essential part of Sefton, and the strand has gone through several changes to adapt to modern society. Could you enlighten us with your views on that?
I think the first thing I want to say is that sometimes when we or other parties besides Labour talk about Bootle strand, is sometimes we're painted as not caring about that area, or that we're painted as saying no, we don't want to see any kind of regeneration in Bootle or in any parts of the south of the borough, really. I mean, that couldn't be further from the truth. I want to see Sefton, you know, north to south, I want to see Sefton do well, and I want to see the people of Bootle get the facilities and the improvements that they deserve, just as much as the people of South, just as much as I think the people of Southport do. But in terms of the specific development and what's gone on with Bootle Strand over, it was purchased in 2017, I think, wasn't it? That's when it was initially purchased. I think that as a purchase, as a project, I think it's been a disaster. Quite frankly, I think that the council borrowing £32.5 million to buy a commercial property portfolio, which is what the Strand is, really, it's a portfolio of commercial property, at a time when no one in the commercial property market was buying commercial property because people could see what was going to happen. It was going to come down in value. So they took out a loan for £32.5 million to buy it. That loan over the course of 25 years is going to end up costing the council £42.5 million. Now, every year, Sefton Council spends £1.7 million a year servicing that loan. So every time your council tax goes up by the 5% that it always goes up every year, and it always has done whilst we've had a Labour-controlled administration, a significant proportion of that 5% increase is going to service a debt that wouldn't have been there. And it's lost value. The last time it was valued at under £15 million. And I just don't think it's good value for money for the taxpayer.
Yeah.
I think the same kind of objective could have been achieved. So if the council wanted to purchase the Strand and redevelop it and repurpose it and create a new kind of retail or commercial environment, it could have done so for a fraction of the price if they'd just applied some commercial acumen to the decision-making process. I genuinely think that the guys who own the Strand, who Sefton Council bought it from, probably couldn't believe the luck, to be honest with you, that they had someone willing to pay the money that Sefton Council did. I just don't think it was a sensible project. That said, though, I think that redevelopment and regeneration in Bootle and any parts of Sefton, for that matter, should always be looked at. Of course, it should be, because it can, you know, it can improve people's lives. It can improve the local economy, better local jobs, gradually bring up the standard of living for everyone living in the area by doing things like that. But this, as a project, it wasn't a good one, really. I don't think it was good choices. No. It's poor choices that have been made over a prolonged period of time, I feel.
No, thank you for that and for the figures, because sometimes people don't bring in the financial aspects. It's just comments. There's no connection between the council and the people who they bought it off.
I don't think so. No, I think from memory, I think it was owned by a company that was based offshore. And I think, I don't think there was a connection between the council and the company they bought it from.
Right. Okay. Thanks. We've also mentioned children's services. Is there anything else you'd like to say about children's services?
Well, what I want to say is that I think that what happened, well, up until 2012 to 2022, when we kind of had the decline, really, in the quality of service that was provided to the most vulnerable children in the borough, I think that, frankly, was shameful, really, because, again, I think poor choices and poor management over a prolonged period of time led to that outcome, really. And we ended up with an inadequate rating, a central government official being sent in to oversee the whole improvement process and the improvement journey. We had multiple changes of directors of children's services. The culture within the council, I feel, what I mean by that is at a senior management level and at a political leadership level, wasn't questioning enough of what was happening. There was too much kind of not really paying attention to what was going on with the department. The recent Ofsted rating, I think credit where credit's due. It's clearly better than it was. It's not perfect. There are still things that need to be addressed, I think, particularly with special educational needs. I think there's significant issues there that still need to be addressed, but there has been an improvement. But we should never have got to that stage in the first place, I don't think.
You've mentioned some of the reasons why you think we got there. Terrible period and terrible services. Can you shed a light on perhaps the motivation behind the decline? Why they weren't keeping their eye on the ball? Why it wasn't important?
I mean, the honest answer is I'm not 100% certain, really, because to me, as a council, councils do lots of things, and sometimes they do too many things, really. We've just talked about Bootle Strand. I mean, that's probably something that I don't think the council should be engaged in, which is, you know, commercial property speculation. But there are certain services which the council is obliged to provide by law. And children's services, so providing that statutory framework to look after the most vulnerable children in the borough, is probably the most important job, I think, that any council has. And every councillor, when you're elected, as well as becoming a member of the council, you become what's called a corporate parent. So effectively, you become a parent to all of the children which are in your care, really, during your period of office. And for the life of me, I cannot really understand why Labour didn't give this issue more attention and more focus. Because the public face of the Labour Party is they're the caring, they're the sympathetic party, they're the people who look after the most vulnerable, et cetera, et cetera. But the experience of many people with Sefton Council is the opposite of that, really. And when those of us who did start to criticise the council for their failings when the Ofsted report came out, we were shouted down by Labour councillors. We were told we were asking difficult questions. We were told we should be looking to the positives and looking to the future, et cetera, et cetera. When we were saying that, no, actually, you need to learn from the mistakes which have been made so that this doesn't happen again in future. So in answer to the initial question about why, I can't give you a specific reason why. I don't know if it's just because of complacency, because, you know, Labour have been in power for a long time in Sefton. Sometimes complacency can breed those kind of attitudes. I think the culture wasn't one of being critical. No one was allowed to be critical of anything really within the council. And I probably feel that applies to children's services as it does to other areas of the council. And you've got overview and scrutiny committees. So like the one I sat on, I was one of only two opposition councillors on that committee. Now, the chair of that committee, and it's the same with all the other overview and scrutiny committees, really, they're chaired and deputy chaired by Labour councillors. So that's not healthy, because they're not really scrutinising the executive. The point of these overview and scrutiny committees is to be a critical body, really, to hold the executive to account and do so in terms which sometimes make people feel uncomfortable, because when you make people feel uncomfortable, they're more likely to act, I find.
No, I totally agree. And I think it has been a kind of mystery to why Sefton was so bad for so long. And again, because it's got a Labour majority, they do sit on all the scrutiny committees. They do control all the scrutiny. Yeah. We have asked them to appear on this podcast and they've refused. Oh. And I can't for the life of me think how a bigger threat we are as a podcast, because they would be able to explain their views, but they've just categorically refused and banned their councillors from appearing.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Right. Okay.
Yes. All the councillors have to get permission from Liz Dowd.
Right.
And the people we have asked have all been turned down.
Right. Okay. I did not know that.
Which is strange, because every other party is coming on. I think being conservative in Sefton, you are open to lots of difficult questions in an interview, but at least you're ready to be there and to say and explain.
Yeah, I think that whether you're a Conservative councillor, Labour councillor, Liberal Democrat councillor, you know, whichever party political affiliation you might have, or whether you're independent, that ultimately you are elected by the people. So you have to answer sometime. And obviously doing things like this and any, you know, broadcast interviews, radio, press, all that kind of stuff, it's part of being held accountable, whether you like it or not, really. And so, I mean, I ask difficult questions, I'll try and answer them as best I can, but I wouldn't shy away from them just because I was worried about being asked a difficult question.
Yeah. A difficult question here comes up on the redevelopment of Southport.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of projects going on at the moment. So there's a lot of projects going on. There's lots of projects in the pipeline. Recently, we've had another announcement about Southport Pier. So it looks like central government are going to be providing that funding. Our issue with that is that, you know, great, we want the money, that's fantastic. We don't care where it comes from. As a Southport councillor, we need to get the pier back open.
Yes.
And it is good news that central government are sounding like they're going to give that funding anyway. We haven't got much detail, but it sounds like they're going to. The issue that we have as a party, really, I would say, with Southport Pier, is that it was allowed to get to the state, but it was, again, you know, it sounds like I'm saying the same kind of thing here, but it is a repeat pattern. It was allowed to get to the state that it was over a prolonged period of time. So the last Conservative government gave Sefton Council £2 million back in 2017 for the specific purpose of refurbishing and repairing Southport Pier. The job that was done was a botched job, really. It wasn't done properly. There were issues with the contractor. There wasn't enough oversight. And basically the money that was spent wasn't spent wisely. So we then ended up with the pier being closed at the end of 2022. So maintenance of the pier is an issue. We need to see a plan for that. It's all well and good spending 20 million quid on getting it open, but we don't want to be in this position in 10 years' time again, talking about, oh, well, the pier's closed because it's not been maintained properly. And there are other projects in Southport as well. So we've got the proposals regarding the town hall gardens. There's the Marine Lake Exhibition Centre, which is being rebuilt as well. So that was from the last Conservative government awarded a grant of £38.5 million via something called the Town Deal. So the big centrepiece of that particular project was redeveloping the old theatre and building this new exhibition centre. That's run into problems recently. So Sefton Council appear unable to get a contractor to carry out the building of it. So they've knocked the old one down, but they can't engage a contractor to build a new centre. And I fear that the Sefton Council is going to be left with two options, really. It's either going to be borrow or spend more money to make the project bigger or to make the budget bigger so that they can entice a contractor to take it on or scale it back in terms of its size and scope. I suspect, I don't know this, but this is just me kind of working out what I think they might do. I suspect they will look to borrow money to increase the budget. And I think it's a failure of project management over a long period of time here that they haven't been able to secure a contractor, that they've knocked down the previous theatre without securing that contractor first. The whole management of the project hasn't been handled very well. And I can understand losing one contractor, but to lose two experienced contractors who engage in these kind of large civil engineering projects on a regular basis seems to indicate to me that there's something wrong within Sefton Council rather than the contract, contractor.
And who is in charge of that on Sefton Council?
Well, notionally, it's the Labour Council who control it. So, I mean, it's the cabinet members who are making the decisions.
Right.
But there'll be senior officer level involvement as well. So they'll be presumably providing input to the cabinet members. But ultimately, it's a decision for the leader and the cabinet, really, as to how this is handled.
Yeah.
And one of the issues we've had as opposition councillors, and not just Conservatives, I include the other opposition parties here as well, is getting any information out of Sefton Council about this project or others is really difficult. They use terms like commercial sensitivity or we can't talk about this because we're in the middle of negotiations, et cetera, et cetera. And it makes it very difficult to hold them to account properly and to properly scrutinise what we're doing. And it means that you only find out that something's gone wrong by the press, really. You know, something gets published in the press and then we, as elected councillors, find out about it through the media, just like the general public did.
Which isn't
right, really. So, that's the way they operate.
Yeah, because we've had other people on the podcast who wanted to get local businesses involved in the redevelopment, you know, and people were saying, well, some local businesses don't have the skills. But I would have thought you could have had part of the contract that you do include local businesses to work alongside and develop skills with young people, etc. Is that even on the table as a discussion?
The honest answer is I don't think any councillor will know whether that's on the table or not, because the contract, because it's shrouded in commercial sensitivity, nobody knows the terms of the contract beyond the cabinet members and the parties to that contract, I would think. That sounds logical. It sounds sensible that if you've got a big project going on in a town to try to engage as many local contractors as you can, really.
Yeah.
So that there's local engagement with it, but also so you're benefiting the local economy directly. So if you're going to be spending this money, why not spend it with local people?
I would have thought that. I was going to say, what do you think is the biggest challenge for Sefton as we move forward?
I think that the biggest challenge, I think, is because everything to me comes back to the economy, really. And to a degree, Sefton is like lots of other parts of the country, is we're subject to what happens in Westminster in terms of whether things like national insurance are going to be increased, or there's all talk of a VAT is going to be increased. I think that the economy is the big driver of everything. And to a degree, I think local authorities are subject to what happens nationally, and they can't do everything they might want to. But I do think that there are things that can be done to improve the local economy. I think that one of the things that we've suggested is it's a small thing, really, but I think it would help a lot of businesses in town centres, including in Southport, Formby, McGull, Crosby, Bootle as well, really, is that there needs to be a review of the parking charges across Sefton. Because I think what we have in place at the moment is from an era where there wasn't as much online shopping. People will spend more online now. Unless you give people a reason to visit a town centre, then they're not going to do it. You know, you've got to stop putting obstacles in their way. And the car parking charges, I think it's a small thing, really, and sounds quite parochial, but There's so many local businesses that I speak to say that the biggest and simplest change that could be introduced from a council perspective will be to introduce something like 3 hours free or something along those lines, so that people could nip into the town centre or, you know, their local shopping, you know, their local high street, nip in, get a bite to eat, buy whatever they need to buy, and then go home. Because at the moment, we're kind of putting impediments in the way of people wanting to do that, because they can go online to buy whatever they need. And if you're not giving them the incentive to go and visit a place, then they're not going to do so. And Sefton's in competition with nearby local authorities. You know, we're in competition with Liverpool. We're in competition with Lancashire. Lots of these places offer, particularly around Christmas time, they offer discounts on parking. We don't. So we're not thinking very commercially. So that's kind of of the economy, I think.
Yeah, no, I would support that completely. Because I remember, I live in Crosby, and I remember when it was free and then it went to parking payment and the seafront as well. Yeah. And it does change.
It does.
It just change habits, and it changes spending habits, etc. Yeah. So I would welcome that. So I hope you keep pushing that.
Oh, we will. And I think if you can get the economy growing and the economy moving, then you get more shops open, then you get more business rates, you get people moving to the area, and on that helps with council tax rates as well, you know, council tax collection, and that all generates the money to pay for the services, so things like children's services, things like basic services like waste collection, those kind of things. If you've got the money coming in, you can deliver a better service. And if you think about things more commercially as a council, as opposed to what's been happening over the last few years, I think it would be better for everyone in Sefton, myself.
No, I would agree. I was going to ask you now, what are you most proud of as a councillor that you have achieved?
I think not so much what I achieved personally, but I think one of the things that made me proud to be a councillor at the time is, given what happened in Southport last year, is the way that everyone came together. Really, both after the initial tragedy, everyone came together to show support and care for one another. And then after we had the riots, there was that community spirit and cleanup and the sense of unity, really, that kind of went across the whole town and the whole borough and across the political spectrum as well, actually. So it was that kind of coming together and how the people of Southport and Sefton showed, actually, that we don't want to be remembered just for that event. That actually we're a town, you know, we're a caring town, we're a caring borough, and that there's more to Sefton, there's more to Southport than that particular event that happened. And I think that working together is occasionally it does kind of produce benefits. So Children's A&E trying to get that back to Southport, I think that's an example of where all the political parties are kind of singing off the same hymn sheet, really. We all want the same result. We all want to see that particular service come back to Southport so that we can have it within Sefton. And there are occasions when we do work together, and that's a good thing. I mean, what I will say as well is that I think that you can't work together on everything, because that's just not realistic. I think part of it, people sometimes complain about the adversarial nature of politics, and we're always having a go at each other and saying this, you know, Labour says this about the Conservatives say this about Labour, and so on. That is part of the process, though. And it's by having that kind of adversarial nature, sometimes you get to work out which are the best ideas. So the best ideas kind of get worked out through debate and discussion, an argument, really. And then the general public can decide, well, actually, I think this person has the best ideas, or this person over here has the best ideas. But on occasion, when we have worked together, I think it has been really good for Sefton as a borough, really, and has shown us in a good light.
No, I would agree with you there. I mean, the riots were shocking.
They were. It was absolutely awful.
Horrific. And people have come together to say, you know, this is not us. We are more. We are compassionate. We are loving. You know, and the mosque is having its open day, isn't it, Sue?
It is. Yes. Yeah.
And that's a great thing as well to make us an inclusive society. So thank you. The last question is a difficult question. We ask this just in case people are living in their own bubble, because it's very nice in your own bubble, whether you're left wing or right wing. Yeah. But what do you think is the main criticisms of why people will not vote Tory?
I think the main criticism would be is people will say things like the previous 14 years, Liz Truss, et cetera, Boris Johnson. Those would be the kind of things that people would level at us as a party, if you like. And there's no getting away from the fact that the Conservative Party of the previous 14 years wasn't perfect. Of course it wasn't. No political party is. But we made mistakes. I'm sure we'll make mistakes again in future, as every political party does, because we're people. We're fundamentally people. Yeah. People make mistakes.
Can I ask what you think the biggest Tory mistake was?
I think that the biggest mistake that probably happened was the leadership around Liz Truss, really. I think that was probably one of the biggest mistakes that we made as a political party, that debacle that happened, really. And when I use that word, what I'm trying to say really is that the manner, in the chaotic manner that everything seemed to come across, when people look at the government and the political party in charge, what they want to see is stability. They want to see control, direction, and that there's a sense of purpose really to what's going on. And that didn't leave our party or my party in a particularly good light either, I think. And we paid a heavy price for that. And, you know, the reality is that the people are never wrong. So when there's an election result, whether you like it or you don't, the people are never wrong.
Yeah.
They will have given that judgment that might have been one factor for other people, it might have been other factors, but they've given that judgment. And the nature of a democracy means that you obviously have to accept that result, but the people are never wrong, whether you like it or not. You can moan about it, you can complain about it, but ultimately it's your fault as to whether or not you win or lose an election.
Yeah, no, quite right. I mean, that is democracy.
It is, yeah.
Labour are going to always say, right, that you cut funding, and that's why everything's the way it is now.
Yeah, see, so when they talk,
that's
so
their pattern.
Quite often the line is the Tories cut X million pounds from Sefton Council's budget, etc. So you've got to look at it from there's a few points with that, I think. So the first thing to say is that Sefton Council's budget didn't get cut. So when you look at what the budget back in 2010 compared to what it is now, it's actually gone up. So the actual overall budget has increased. So when people talk about cutting the budget, what they're talking about is the central government grant. So that's what was reduced. And in effect, the Conservative government said that councils need to get their house in order and run their services efficiently, effectively, and within the budgets that they have available to them, so that when things go wrong, they can't come running to central government saying, can you give us some more cash? Because there isn't a magic money tree. It just isn't. And the reason that decision had to be taken back in 2010, if people remember, is that at that general election, and I know this is 15 years ago now, but the country was skint. Quite frankly, the country was broke. We just had a massive financial crisis. And Labour had done nothing in the years preceding to get a control of government debt or the deficit. So we ended up in a position where the Conservative government had to make some very difficult decisions to make sure that the country's books were balanced. So that's the first point, I think, to say that the budget's not been cut. What people mean is the central government grant isn't as high as what it would have been previously, but there's reasons for that. Now you look at what each individual council has to do themselves to operate within their budgets. Mm. So there are certain core services that they have to provide. So we've talked about children's services. That's a statutory function that the council has to provide. Things like waste collection, education, et cetera, things they have to provide. But there are things they don't have to provide. And this is where Sefton have gone wrong, I think. So engaging in commercial property speculation, which is what Bootlestrand is to me, they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to set up a catering company which runs at about £600,000 deficit think the last time we looked at some of the numbers, they didn't have to set up a building company like Sandway Homes, which doesn't make any money and which the council has underwritten millions of pounds of guarantees to. So there are decisions that have been taken by Sefton Council, which they didn't have to take. So there are certain things they do have to do, so just core statutory services, but there are things they didn't have to do. And it's those things they didn't have to do which have contributed over a prolonged period of time. So we're talking since 2012 here, when once Labour got control of the council. Since then, they've embarked on these projects and loss-making catering companies, a building company that doesn't make any money, commercial property speculation that they're not very good at. They should leave it to the private sector. And all these things add up over a period of time so that we have a council now with quite significant levels of debt. Those debts are going to go up. And it means that when you do have to suddenly spend a lot of money, so like they had to do with children's services. So I think since the Ofsted report, I think when I asked a question, it was a good few months ago, the figure was about £256 million has been spent since the inadequate Ofsted report. That means it puts pressure on other parts of the budget because you've spent money on frivolous projects elsewhere.
Right.
So
no.
there are reasons why Sefton Council's finances aren't as good as they could be. To simply say it's all the fault of the Conservatives just kind of abdicates any responsibility that Labour have had since 2012. If that's what they genuinely think, they're basically saying that they may as well not have been in charge, frankly, because there's nothing they could have done to change things, which isn't true.
Right, no. And if or when they come on the podcast, yes, because they do need to explain and to be transparent. But can I just say thank you so much for coming on,
no problem,
giving of your time and explaining, you know, your role and also the role of the Conservatives in Sefton, because I think collectively our aim, whatever our political persuasion, is to build a better Sefton.
It is. I think everybody wants things to be better one way or the other, don't they, really?
Yes.
It's just that we all come at it from slightly different viewpoints, but I think fundamentally everyone wants the best for the people who live and work here.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much.
No problem. Okay, thanks very much, David.
Yeah, okay. Take care.
You too. Bye now.
Right.